It wasn't exactly an unusual sight. A white car, seemingly abandoned, sat along an isolated stretch of rural highway in Alabama. For hours, commuters passed by the scene without even noticing. At first glance, there wasn't anything about the car that should have drawn attention. Then, one driver saw something that grabbed his. It wasn't the look of the car. It was in good shape and appeared to have been well cared for. There was no sign of an accident, no torn up earth, smoke, or fire. But there was movement inside, a shadow shifting behind the glass. There, in the back seat, sat a 2-year-old child, still buckled in, with no sign of the driver in sight. The car belonged to her mother, 30-year-old Tracy Kegley, but she hadn't been seen since the previous afternoon. Where was she? And how long had her car sat there with her daughter trapped inside? What had initially begun as an investigation of an abandoned vehicle quickly became a desperate search for the vehicle's owner. The task was nearly insurmountable. Miles of dense woods dotted with murky ponds and flooded quarries. While many theorized Tracy must have been targeted by someone passing through the area that night, someone who abducted her, investigators quickly realized they weren't looking for a stranger, but someone highly familiar with the area who likely lived nearby and may have known Tracy. This is Trace Evidence, Episode 155, The Disappearance of Tracy Kegley. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today we examine the mysterious disappearance of Tracy Kegley. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and disappearances. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence. If you're interested in supporting the show and getting some Trace Evidence merch, there's a Patreon at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate directly via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information. You can submit case suggestions through the website or email me directly at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Tracy Kegley needed to run some errands. She carried her daughter out to the car, strapped her into her seat, and drove off for what was supposed to be a short trip. The next morning, her daughter was found safe, but Tracy was gone. This is episode 155, The Disappearance of Tracy Kegley. The overnight chill had faded as the sun transformed the sky into brilliant shades of pink and red before everything was swallowed into the endless blue. The greenery of the surrounding wilderness seemed to have a golden glow as the morning sun continued its ascent, illuminating a thin stretch of pavement carving its way like a blade through the forestry. As the morning progressed, traffic slowly increased until a steady stream of cars and trucks went zooming along the sparsely populated stretch of road, yet there was one which never moved, its white body jutting out in stark contrast to the rock and earth. Countless commuters would pass through the area over several hours that April morning, most never even noticing the seemingly abandoned vehicle. It was just before 9 a.m. when a man living nearby spotted the white car with a roll-tied decorative front plate. While most people had simply ignored the still vehicle, this man found his attention captured by a sudden flash of movement. Pulling over to the side of the road, he stepped down from his truck and slowly walked towards the car, wondering if maybe his mind had been playing tricks on him. But then he saw it again. There was something moving in the back seat, though the exact shape was difficult to identify due to the tint of the quarter-glass windows on the 2-door car. Finally, reaching the passenger side door, the man leaned in close, allowing his eyes to adjust. As the reflection of his face slowly faded into the shadow of his body, he found himself staring into the eyes of a child, no more than a toddler, sitting buckled into her seat. As his eyes widened, the man quickly glanced around the area, calling out for the driver, but receiving no answer other than the echo of his own voice. Looking back towards the child, it was quite clear that something was very wrong here. Pulling his phone from his pocket, the man dialed 911, and within moments was speaking to a dispatcher with the Elmore County Sheriff's Office, who advised that they would be sending a deputy to investigate the situation and take custody of the child. Upon arrival, the deputy ran the vehicle's plates through the system, and it kicked back the owner's name, leading to a question which has gone unanswered for nearly 23 years. Where is Tracy Kegley? Tracy Lee Pittman was born on Tuesday, March 5, 1968, to parents Stephen and Linda in Montgomery, Alabama. Tracy was their firstborn child, though just a few years later, they would welcome a baby boy, Tracy's younger brother. She's been described as a kind, loving, and sweet child who captured everyone's attention with her brilliant green hazel eyes. Tracy was close with her family and enjoyed spending time at home when she wasn't riding her bike and exploring the wilderness surrounding them. She would spend a large portion of her youth growing up in the Spring Valley neighborhood of Montgomery, a picturesque suburban neighborhood perfect for raising a family. She attended Peter Crump Elementary School, less than 2 miles from her Doesford Road home, near the southern border of the neighborhood, where paved roads and newly built houses were replaced with a vast woods, dirt trails and paths zigzagging through the dense tree line. It was at school that she would meet Tammy Sexton, who lived just a few streets away, and the two quickly formed a friendship which would grow stronger over the course of the next 30 years. As kids, they were inseparable and did almost everything together, from studying to playing. As Tammy would later tell the Montgomery Advisor, quote, "We used to play in the woods along those hiking trails back behind our houses. We'd ride our bikes to the pack-a-sack and buy candy, and we'd play hide-and-seek at night throughout the neighborhood," end quote. Tracy was a good student who'd kept her grades high and never gotten into much trouble. She steered clear of the bad crowd and developed into a dependable and intelligent young woman with a strong sense of drive and determination. She'd go on to attend high school at Landmark Christian School, which provided smaller class sizes and more direct interaction with faculty and staff. During her junior and senior years, Tracy really began to blossom and put a little more focus on her looks, with several local papers describing her, alongside her best friend Tammy, as class beauties. Tracy graduated from high school in the spring of 1986, with a focus on getting into the medical field, as she'd always had a nurturing nature and desire to help others. Over the course of the next few years, she'd go on to become a phlebotomist. She'd work at Russell Medical Center in Alexander City, approximately an hour northeast of Montgomery, and later at the Alabama Reference Laboratory in her hometown. Tracy was a dedicated employee who knew her job and did it extremely well, according to former coworkers, who couldn't say enough about her professionalism and reliability, not to mention her charming personality and sense of humor. In May of 1992, when she was 24 years old, Tracy attended her best friend Tammy's wedding, serving as her maid of honor. Less than a year later, Tracy herself would tie the knot. On February 13, 1993, she married Gregory Kegley in a service at the Vaughan Park Church of Christ. She was given away by her father, Stephen, and her brother served as a groomsman. The newlywed couple had a honeymoon in the mountains before returning to Montgomery, where they lived in a home on Fairfield Drive. By all accounts, the marriage was a happy one, at least in the early years, with Tracy and Greg getting along well and seemingly thrilled to be together. Tracy was working at the lab during this time, while Greg was employed by the Alabama Power Company. In the fall of 1995, their joy would grow exponentially when they welcomed the birth of a daughter. While the daughter's name is out there in the public, I'm choosing not to say it in this episode to help protect her privacy. Tracy was elated to be a mother and was looking forward to spending as much time as she could with her daughter. Linda and Steve, Tracy's parents, were excited to be grandparents and made sure to visit frequently, doing what grandparents do best, spoiling their grandkid. Unfortunately, in the latter years, the marriage began to hit the rocks, and in late 1997, the couple would finally split, filing for divorce. They separated as the divorce would take several months to be finalized, and during that time, Tracy moved out of their shared home and into her own place. But in the early months of 1998, she'd leave Montgomery, heading 32 miles to the northeast to stay with her parents in Eclectic, not far from Central, and a part of the Montgomery metropolitan area. On the 5th of March, Tracy celebrated her 30th birthday. While the circumstances of her situation may not have been exactly what she wanted at the time, she knew the divorce was necessary, and she was remaining optimistic about her future prospects as she'd been looking for a new line of work. The next month, on April 11th, the divorce was finalized. Just a few days after that, Tracy sat down for an interview at a dentist's office in Montgomery, where she was applying for a position as a dental assistant. It went well, and she was offered the job, which she happily accepted. Her first shift was scheduled to take place on the morning of Monday, April 27th, but what should have been an exciting day would instead become the beginning of a tragic mystery, as Tracy would vanish just 24 hours before her new job would begin. Sunday, April 26th, began as most days did for Tracy and her family. There didn't appear to be anything unusual about the morning hours outside of the young mother's excitement for her new job. It seems fairly clear that while investigators possess far more details about the exact timeline, travel, and destinations for Tracy that day, they have revealed little. As we progress into the meat of the evidence, what evidence has actually been shared, it may become a bit more apparent exactly why they've chosen to be so tight-lipped about the details. As morning transitioned into afternoon, Tracy had some errands to run. According to Linda, her mother, they loaned her one of their credit cards so she could fill up the gas tank of her white 1993 Geo Storm, a two-door hatchback which was marketed as being a sports car for people on a budget. And for those of you who don't remember, this isn't surprising, as in the United States, they were only available from 1990 to 1993. According to multiple reports, Tracy's family last saw her as she was leaving their home in Eclectic for what was supposed to be a trip lasting no longer than an hour or two. What exactly occurred over the next few hours is unknown, or at least unreported, and the next sighting takes place approximately 23 miles to the southwest. Around 6:30 p.m., several witnesses were present at a BP gas station near the intersection of U.S. Highway 230 North and Redland Road, northeast of Montgomery and on the southern edges of Wetumpka, a small city in southern Elmore County. They reported seeing Tracy, her white Geo Storm, and her daughter. According to Linda, this was a gas station that Tracy was very familiar with and often stopped at before making the trip north. There was one of those small self-service car washes in the parking lot, and Tracy would often clean her car off there. According to WSFA reporter Jennifer Horton, witnesses later stated that when they saw Tracy that night, she was engaged in an argument with at least two and possibly three other people. None of these people's identities have ever been revealed, though it has been mentioned in some articles that they were reported to have been friends or perhaps former friends of Tracy's. They were, at a minimum, people she was familiar with and obviously had an issue with. The details of the argument, what caused it, and how heated it became have never been revealed. At the time, the gas station wasn't equipped with surveillance cameras, so eyewitness accounts are all investigators have to go on. What we do know, though, is that following the conclusion of the dispute, Tracy got into her car and drove away, and those she was arguing with got into their own car and drove off, apparently in different directions or with enough space and time between them that none of the witnesses felt Tracy was being pursued, and the situation seemed to have been diffused. This was the last confirmed sighting of Tracy, though there are some early news articles which claim she, or at least her car, was seen later that night. When Tracy didn't return home, her parents became concerned. It wasn't like her to stay out well into the evening hours without so much as a call, not to mention, she had her 2.5-year-old daughter with her, and she wasn't the type to keep her out all hours of the night. After making a few calls and trying to track her down with no luck, Linda and Steve decided they needed to go out looking for her, thinking maybe she'd run into car trouble somewhere along the way. And with some stretches of road running for miles through isolated wilderness, she'd be unlikely to find a phone to use. One of the first people they had called was Tammy. She hadn't seen or heard from Tracy that day, but she knew her well enough to know she wouldn't just run off without telling anyone, so she decided to go along with the parents and help them search. It wasn't initially something anyone was panicked about, at least not yet. For several hours, the three drove around all the roads running between Eclectic and Wetumpka, though they saw no sign of Tracy, her daughter, or her car. Tammy later explained the search to the advertiser, saying, quote, "We drove around all night long looking for her. I was hanging out of a car window shining a spotlight in those deep ditches along the road. I thought she had had a wreck and was in one of those ditches." End quote. With each passing hour, the worry intensified before it became a panic. Despite their efforts, they hadn't had any luck in tracking down their daughter, though this may have had something to do with the chosen routes. There are several different main roads which can get a driver from Wetumpka to Eclectic, those being Highway 9, Highway 170, and a little out of the way, Highway 14. At that time, though, there was ongoing construction which had temporarily shut down part of 170, and Tracy was well aware of it, so no one believed she'd have tried to take that route on her way home. The search for Tracy continued well into the morning hours, and by the time the decision could be made to contact the authorities, as now it seemed impossible that Tracy could have stayed with a friend or had to wait out car trouble, the sheriff's office was already becoming aware of a bizarre situation along 170. On the morning of Monday, August 27th, a man living along 170, also known as Georgia Road, spotted a white 1993 Geo Storm abandoned. 170 is just under 12 miles long, running from Wetumpka in the southwest to Eclectic in the northeast. The majority of the road runs through fairly isolated areas surrounded by thick woods and large chunks of farmland. There are several side roads that split off from 170, the vast majority of which immediately change from pavement to gravel or dirt, and most run only a few hundred feet before coming to dead ends or private homes. The road has no shoulder, just grass and dirt, leading towards wooded areas and, in some instances, ditches which can be difficult to escape should a car get stuck. There are also lakes, rivers, swamps, old abandoned quarries, and asphalt pits, some of which have been flooded over the years. While for many, the area offers all levels of hiking, hunting, and exploring, it can also be intimidating and dangerous for those without the experience or know-how to survive in the wilderness, and a nighttime breakdown on the side of 170 could mean hours of waiting until someone comes along the next morning. That's what the man who found the car thought at first, that someone had broken down and left their car when they went looking for help. The man really didn't think too much of it until he saw movement in the back seat. Approaching the car, he saw Tracy's 2.5-year-old daughter in the back, still strapped in. When he wasn't able to locate the driver, and it became apparent that it had been sitting there for at least a few hours, the man called 911 and spoke with the Elmore County Sheriff's Office, who dispatched a deputy. Arriving on the scene, it became immediately clear that something was very off about this situation, so the deputy radioed in for assistance on what was either a child abandonment case, or more likely, a missing person situation. As investigators arrived at the scene, they noted several bizarre details. From the outside, it didn't appear that there was any damage to the car, nor was there anything noticeably wrong with it which would suggest that it was not disabled. The tires were full and the body was clean outside of some dirt and dust. The car was found unlocked, with the keys in the ignition, and while the engine wasn't running, the key had been turned to the accessory option, which allowed power windows to be controlled, as well as the radio. When investigators turned the key, the car started up without issue and the gas tank was completely full. There was no obvious signs of a struggle in or around the car, nothing to suggest there had been any issues at all, and that's what worried police so much. There was no apparent reason the car should be in that spot, and even more so, absolutely no reason why anyone would abandon the car with a 2-year-old sitting in the back seat. According to investigators, the child was healthy and unharmed, and was turned over to her father when they made him aware of the situation. It was theorized the child had been left in the car overnight, likely having been sitting there for at least 8 to 10 hours. Curiously, both windows on the car had been left a few inches down, and the radio was on, but at a low level, perhaps to keep her calm or entertained. Running the license plates kicked back Tracy's name, but no one knew where she was. When they tracked down and contacted her parents, they learned she'd left the previous afternoon and never come home. Police located both Tracy's purse and her ID, though it's never been specified whether those items were in the car or nearby to it, as it's only ever been said they were found at the scene. While they had no solid evidence that a crime had been committed, there was little else which made sense. Based on what had been found, or perhaps more accurately, what had not been found, Elmore County Sheriff Bill Franklin made the decision to treat it as a case of abduction or kidnapping. He later told the Advertiser, quote, "Right now, we can't say if foul play is involved, but until we know for sure, we are treating this as the real thing," end quote. Few details have ever been released regarding the car, or any forensic evidence which may have been discovered during processing. The position of the car was approximately 2 miles from a quarry, where Tracy may have been spotted. This detail has never been developed further, or even 100% confirmed as true from what I can tell, but Sheriff Franklin initially told reporters, quote, "She was last seen on Sunday evening on Old Georgia Road near the rock quarry," end quote. Due to this information, investigators would launch 2 searches in the area. One would head towards the quarry, while the other would center around the car itself. The searches were conducted on foot, and a tracking dog was brought in to assist, but these initial searches yielded no results. And by Tuesday, April 28th, the sheriff's office was putting out information regarding Tracy's physical description and last known whereabouts in hopes that someone might have seen something. Investigators began trying to track her movements on that Sunday and the hours before her disappearance, though all that's ever been publicly confirmed is that she was last seen at the BP gas station near Wetumpka. On Thursday, April 30th, search efforts focused on 2 flooded gravel pits a few miles southwest of where the car was found. According to Sheriff Franklin, this area became a point of interest based on calls received by local tipsters in the days after the media covered the story. I should also note, by this date, the BP station is officially listed as the last place Tracy was seen, and any mention of her being spotted near the quarry vanishes. Tracy's father, Steve, was present at the searches that day and spoke to the media, explaining that his granddaughter was doing well and they were trying to keep a positive outlook in regard to Tracy. In terms of the searches, they were complicated. Both flooded pits were dragged and divers were sent in, though they noted extremely low visibility and water temperatures in the 50s. The quarry was noted as having 0 visibility once divers were a few feet below the water surface. Ground searches focused on areas where it could be reached by foot, as several locations along the edge have a dangerous steep drop-off of 40 feet or more. Nothing of evidentiary value was discovered during these searches, with divers stating they'd only found logs and piles of rocks from previous slides. Upon pulling divers and searchers from the area, Sheriff Franklin explained that they were going to return to where the car had been found and conduct more extensive searches in that area. Tracy's parents announced at this time that they were offering a $10,000 reward for information regarding their daughter's whereabouts. That first weekend, May 2nd and 3rd, more sprawling searches would be conducted involving law enforcement, fire departments, rescue groups, and local volunteers. All told, more than 250 people turned out to search through the heavily wooded area surrounding 170, as well as many of the split-off roads and ditches in the area. These searches lasted for most of the daytime hours that weekend, though nothing major appears to have been discovered. Regarding Tracy's whereabouts, Sheriff Franklin told the Advertiser that they'd received several tips, some of which led investigators into neighboring counties, and that, despite the lack of new evidence, the more time passed, the more it appeared likely that foul play was behind the young mother's disappearance. Unfortunately, despite searches and tips, investigators didn't feel they were getting any closer to actually finding her. On Tuesday, May 12th, 15 days after Tracy was last seen, Chief Deputy Paul Anderson spoke with the Advertiser and explained that the situation wasn't looking good. Deputy Anderson told reporters, quote, "We haven't received any clues or information about where she may be. We have gotten a lot of calls from the public and checked out a lot of leads, but nothing has panned out yet," end quote. At that time, investigators urged the public to come forward with information, as they firmly believe someone in the area knew more about Tracy's disappearance than they were telling. While searches continued to be launched, the result was always the same, with team members returning frustrated and empty-handed. On Monday, May 18th, investigators received a tip which they thought might break the case, but upon tracking the lead, it was just another dead end. Sadly, within a month of Tracy's disappearance, the case was already beginning to grow cold. While investigators noted that they were still actively looking for the young mother, they had little to work with and tips were drying up. For the majority of that year, Tracy's name fell out of the public's attention, as there were no new articles, leads, nothing to generate more attention on the case or perhaps encourage anyone to come forward. For her parents, it was heartbreaking and terrifying to not know what became of their daughter or who might have been responsible for it. When asked about what she believed happened, Linda told the Advertiser, quote, "She would never have left her baby in the car like that. My gut feeling is somebody got her. Somebody's kidnapped her. This is a parent's worst nightmare," end quote. Linda noted that she believed something happened at the gas station, as her young granddaughter always seemed to be afraid of that area. In hopes of reinvigorating the case, Linda and Steve had a billboard erected on US 231, right near the gas station where Tracy was last seen. The billboard showed photos of Tracy and advertised the $10,000 reward. When Sheriff Franklin was asked about the case, he explained that after several months passed with no new information and no ability to have investigators dedicated to the case despite the workload of others, he made the choice to hand Tracy's investigation over to the Alabama Bureau of Investigation. He described her disappearance as bizarre, saying, quote, "The child was found in the car unharmed, and the windows were left open 2 or 3 inches for the child to get air. The ignition auxiliary was on, and the radio was on and turned down low, like she were going to be gone for a few minutes, but was planning on coming right back," end quote. When reached for comment, ABI spokeswoman Doris Teague noted that while the case was actively being investigated, there had been 627 disappearances in the state in 1998, and while nearly 500 cases had been resolved, 135 people were still missing, Tracy among them. Reportedly, there had been some sightings of a woman who resembled Tracy in Lowndes County, 50 miles to the southwest of where her car had been found. Local police attempted to verify these sightings, but were never able to track down the woman that witnesses claimed to have seen. And by this point, investigators didn't believe that Tracy was out there somewhere, free to be spotted. There was a firm yet unspoken belief that the young mother had likely never left Elmore County. Over the course of the next few years, there was little development on Tracy's case. Every year, though, her parents would find a way to increase the reward for information, and in March of 2002, when Tracy would have turned 34 years old, the amount offered reached $100,000. When speaking to the Advertiser, Linda explained the struggle, saying, quote, "No one can tell you how your mind never quits working. I know someone knows about this. I'm not ever giving up, not unless it gets to the point where I have to. If I had it, I would make it $1 million, but I don't. We just hope it will make someone come forward," end quote. Tracy's daughter at this point was 6 years old, but unfortunately, she had no recollection of what occurred the day her mother vanished, and for the most part, the family tried to steer her clear of the case, not wanting to further traumatize her. Linda noted she was doing well and lived with her father, but that in her looks and behavior, her granddaughter was a constant reminder of Tracy. Time would continue moving, And over the course of the next few years, there were a couple of instances in which human remains were discovered in rural areas of Elmore and surrounding counties. In each of those cases, Tracy was considered a possibility, but there was never a match to her DNA, dental records, or fingerprints, which investigators have on file. Tracy's family continued to push for information, but as the years passed, they stopped speaking with the media, and the billboards eventually stopped too. It was hard to confront the situation on a daily basis, let alone to discuss it on important anniversaries when local reporters decided to cover it. With no developments, hope that Tracy was still alive had faded, and her family began to accept that if she ever was found, it would likely be in the form of a body. Days turned to weeks, weeks to months, and months to years. Time moved, as it always does, but Tracy was never forgotten. Not to her family, not to her friends, not to those who loved her. Reporters stopped writing. With no updates or new information, they had little to say other than mentioning her from time to time when someone else disappeared or a body was found. People moved on, life continued, and the community continued to grow. The story became a cautionary tale and then inspired urban legends. But for investigators and Tracy's family, the truth was more terrifying than any fiction. Then, out of nowhere, nearly 20 years after she vanished, investigators held a press conference to announce a massive search would take place, focusing in on an area where they'd never looked before. On Sunday, February 25, 2018, District Attorney Randall Houston, alongside Crime Stoppers, the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency, or ALEA, and Tracy's parents, addressed the media, stating that the search would begin the following day, and it would be a monumental challenge, as they would need to cover nearly 350 acres of densely wooded property 15 to 20 miles from where Tracy's car had been found. The exact location of the search was never publicly disclosed, as investigators didn't want to risk people potentially going onto the land, which was privately owned, to conduct their own searches and possibly contaminate evidence in the process. DA Houston explained, quote, "We believe this is as close as we have come to a break in the case for several years. This is a massive search and could take a week or more. This is probably the largest search I have ever dealt with in any case," end quote. I'll now play you part of the press conference in which DA Houston explains plans for the search itself.
"As you know, we have moved in a great deal of equipment and resources from around the country to search an area of land close to the Friendship community. We will be searching it for the next 4 to 5 days, depending on the weather. So we are going to start. We have secured the property. It was secured this morning. Search warrant was served. ALEA and the other law enforcement agencies that are involved in this operation have made sure that the property is secure. We've been on there. We've looked at it. We've got dog teams that are coming. They've looked at it, and they feel certain that we can conduct the search within the time limits that we have. But it will start tomorrow, and it will go through the end of the week. And we hope to have some good results. But if we don't, all I can say is, if there's any evidence there, we'll find it. If there's not, then we searched every bit of it."
When asked about what brought on this new search, DA Houston explained that this had come from a tip received back in 2015, and it had taken nearly 3 years to run it down and verify the information. Here's DA Houston explaining.
"In 2015, we participated in a Crime Stoppers program that Mr. Garrett set up with WSFA. As a result of that that interview, the chief investigator, the lead investigator in this case, received some information. He's been tracking it down. ALEA has done a tremendous job of following the leads, and it's led us here today. So we are conducting this search. This is probably the best lead we've had in this case in a number of years, but it's just another lead. And when we finish doing this, we'll check off the next box that comes up."
After receiving the tip, there were, apparently, several attempts made to get a look at this section of land, but investigators were inhibited by two factors. A large fence surrounded the plot of land, making it difficult to get a view without anyone knowing, and they didn't want to tip anyone off that they were viewing this location in connection with a crime. While DA Houston explicitly stated that the investigation showed the owner of the property was not involved, they didn't want to risk someone who may have been involved returning to the site to remove or destroy evidence. At that time, it was noted that the person or persons responsible are likely still in the area. Here's DA Houston addressing that.
I personally do believe that the people responsible for her disappearance are in Elmore County and are still in Elmore County. And when they look over their shoulder, they're going to see us coming.
DA Houston noted that it was believed from day one of the investigation that foul play had been involved and the answers would be found through people in the local community. Investigators managed to present what evidence they had to a circuit court judge who issued a search warrant for the property. They then approached the Alabama Fusion Center, who were able to use geographic information system mapping combined with aerial and satellite imagery to map out the property, noting the location of dirt roads, streams, ponds, and physical structures. A SWAT team was sent to serve the search warrant and ensure that the property was clear for searchers to enter, and once that signal was given, drones were used to get more accurate images of the land and structures. AT&T sent out trucks which broadcast a signal in the otherwise dead zone for cell phones, allowing searchers to use cell phones to map out where it had been searched. Any suspicious items discovered were marked with flags, as well as noted via the phone's GPS. The land search took place from Monday, February 26th to Thursday, the 29th. Searchers noted that a large deer population had once been on the property, but had dwindled due to lack of care and food, which resulted in them eating up much of the surrounding vegetation. There were reportedly deer bones and carcasses all over the property, which made things more complicated both in terms of the search and the smell. Cadaver dogs were brought in to sweep the land again, though their attention was always drawn to one spot, a pond, described as being approximately 5 acres in size. 4 dive teams entered the water and conducted searches throughout much of the final days. The search was wrapping up on Saturday, March 3rd, and all told, involved more than 20 agencies, including police departments from Opelika, Prattville, Wetumpka, and Auburn, sheriff's departments from Elmore, Lee, Autauga, Blount, and Chilton counties, as well as the Alabama State Bureau of Investigation, Prattville Fire Department, the Alabama Emergency Management Agency, Haynes Ambulance, ESRI, and Crime Stoppers. Southwest Panhandle Search and Rescue helped facilitate a total of 15 cadaver dog teams brought in from states as far away as Maryland. In total, during the search, drones flew 32 miles, taking more than 2,000 photos. 137 points of interest were marked by searchers. Dogs walked 140 miles, and on foot, searchers walked a distance of more than 1,500 miles. The same day that operations were wrapping up, DA Houston announced that potential evidence had been discovered in the pond, telling the advertiser, quote, "This potential evidence will require extensive review and the process may take several weeks, but we are very hopeful," end quote. When discussing possible suspects, while no names were ever given, DA Houston would only say, quote, "We know who you are, and if you don't come see us very soon, we will be coming to see you," end quote. More than 3 years have passed since that search was conducted, and what evidence was found, believed to have been partial human remains, has failed to deliver what investigators had hoped for. It turns out the bones discovered may have actually been deer bone, though that's never been released, and the results of the forensic analysis have never been discussed, but it seems apparent whatever they found was not enough to move this case forward. When asked about the search a year later in March of 2019, DA Houston explained to the advertiser, quote, "It's disappointing. We had such high hopes then. We were hoping the potential evidence we found that last day was the piece of the puzzle we were looking for, the one thing that made everything fall into place. Forensics still has the evidence. Law enforcement has the case. I haven't received any reports from law enforcement. You never lose hope. We will continue to investigate, but I don't think it would surprise anyone that we were expecting a break by now. End quote. While Houston wouldn't go into detail about the suspects, it being specified that there's more than one and possibly as many as three who may have worked together, he did have a message he wanted to deliver to them. Houston stated, quote, "We still have the same suspects, or people of interest, or whatever you want to call them. The sons of bitches need to know that justice doesn't sleep. We're going to continue to work this case for Tracy and her parents. They deserve it. And for the community, Elmore County deserves to see justice served." End quote. Tracy's parents were obviously disappointed by the lack of results, but deeply touched by the vast number of people who gave their time to take part in that search. However, the hope remains that Tracy will be found, and the belief is universal that those responsible are still in Elmore County, and undoubtedly, there are people with information who have not come forward. When last seen, Tracy Lee Pittman Kegley was described as being a white female with hazel eyes and brown hair, frosted at the time, standing 5 feet 10 inches tall and weighing approximately 140 pounds. She was last seen wearing pink shorts, a white top with a flower design, and women's size 8.5 white shoes. She has a cesarean scar, and her ears are pierced. She was last seen in the vicinity of the now-defunct BP gas station near the intersection of U.S. 231 North and Redland Road on the southern edge of Wetumpka on Sunday, April 26, 1998. Her car, a white 1993 Geo Storm, was found abandoned the next day along Alabama 170 with her 2-year-old daughter inside. Tracy was 30 years old at the time, and if alive today, would now be 53. A young mother leaves home with her 2-year-old daughter to run errands and fill up her tank. She never returns. The next morning, her car is found abandoned along an isolated stretch of road. Her daughter, unharmed in the back seat, was likely witness to what happened, but at such a young age, could not remember nor provide any helpful information. Now, more than 20 years later, the truth remains unknown despite exhaustive efforts from everyone involved in the investigation. While for some, Tracy was the face on the billboard, a cautionary tale, for others, she was a daughter, sister, and mother. When asked about her daughter, Linda Pittman replied, quote, "I don't even have a grave to visit and put flowers on. That haunts me. I can take her clothes and still smell her perfume. It just makes me want to put my arms around her and hold her close to me, but I know I can't because someone took her away from me. They don't even have the guts to call, even if it's to let me know that she could be dead." If you have 30 free minutes, you never have to worry about a break-in at home ever again. That's how quick and easy it is to set up a security system from SimpliSafe. It's the kind of thing that's so easy to do, you can do it during a Netflix binge, watching the game, or maybe even listening to a certain podcast. SimpliSafe is so easy to set up that I almost couldn't believe it. I receive sensors for doors and windows and cameras to protect every corner of my home. One thing I really love about SimpliSafe is that there's no long-term contract to get locked into, no hidden fees or installation costs. It's just direct and, well, simple. Another huge bonus is not having to make alterations to your home, no holes to patch up later or complicated wiring to assemble. Simply put the sensors where you need them, aim the cameras, and you're done. When I leave home or head to bed, I feel extra safe turning on the system, and I definitely sleep easier. SimpliSafe is incredibly easy to customize for your home. Just go to simplisafe.com/trace. You can easily choose the exact sensors you need or get help from one of their experts. It'll get to your house in about a week, which means by this time next week, you and your whole family can go to bed knowing your home is being guarded. It's easy to assume everyone in your house already feels safe, but they might not, and it's worthwhile to talk about. And SimpliSafe is a small, easy step to make everyone feel safe at home. Go to simplisafe.com/trace today to customize your system and get a free security camera. You also get a 60-day risk-free trial, so there's nothing to lose. That's simplysafe.com/trace. I'm always looking for puzzle games that can give me a good challenge, something that requires more than the same simple strategy round after round. I tried a lot of different options, but eventually I began to wonder if I'd ever find something that would satisfy me, and that's when I saw Best Fiends. Best Fiends puts my brain to work, and afterwards I feel like my mind just ran a few miles and earned the victory. Best Fiends is so much more fun than other puzzle matching games. You know, like the one where you just smash candy over and over again and again without even really paying attention. In fact, Best Fiends is so much fun, I still can't stop playing. Not that that's a problem, since Best Fiends has literally thousands of fun puzzles to solve. I'm on level 1500 now, and there's still so much more to go. With Best Fiends, there's something new every time I play, and the adorable collectible characters just keep coming and getting cuter. I love the collection challenges, and right now, I've been working hard to compete King Slug's court, collecting hilarious little jesters. I just have so much fun going up against these challenges and finding new and interesting ways to progress while growing my adorable little army. Download the 5-star rated puzzle game Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R. Best Fiends. In less than 2 weeks, it will be 23 years since Tracy Kegley mysteriously vanished from rural Alabama. Despite the passage of time, the efforts of her family, and the lengths investigators have gone to, the questions being asked that warm spring morning still remain unanswered. Clues are few in a case which simultaneously shows so much and yet reveals so little. More than 2 decades later, and we know almost nothing about what happened between the gas station in Wetumpka and that isolated stretch of highway. A young mother goes out to run errands and fill her gas tank, but never makes it home. Instead, hours later, her car is found abandoned on the side of the road with her 2-year-old daughter in the back seat, seemingly unaware of what horrors may have occurred. Everyone who knew Tracy knew something was terribly wrong. She'd never willingly abandon her daughter. Someone must have taken her, but there didn't appear to be any obvious motive. It's a case full of questions with almost no answers. Was the crime random or targeted? Did Tracy know her abductor, or was this all the work of a complete stranger who saw an opportunity and took it? The terrible truth may be that someone knows exactly what happened, and those responsible may still be in the area, leaving the population to wonder if their friend, neighbor, or coworker could be a cold-blooded killer. This is one of the cases that's exceedingly frustrating to examine because of how little information we really have. We know where Tracy was last seen, we know where her car was found, and we know where police have focused their searches. There are suspects, but their names have never been revealed, and the case details have been so closely guarded that we don't have very much to analyze. Oftentimes, in a case like this, you're buried beneath an avalanche of theories, and yet, when it comes to Tracy Kegley, there's really only 2 possibilities that have ever been considered. That she was abducted by a complete stranger, or maybe by someone she knew and may have trusted. So let's begin with a stranger and work our way towards someone more familiar. By all accounts, Tracy drove away from the gas station that Sunday around 6:30 p.m. Whatever happened which resulted in her disappearance must have occurred somewhere between the southern fringes of Wetumpka and the side of Alabama Highway 170. We're not talking about hundreds of miles worth of possibilities, but a disappearance which takes place in a span of a little less than 10 miles. Somewhere, while making the drive back to her parents' home, Tracy encountered someone looking for trouble. If you're looking at the possibility of a stranger, then there's a lot of different circumstances which may have unfolded. Perhaps someone approached her vehicle at a stoplight or feigned a need for roadside assistance. Maybe Tracy was suckered in by tactics which are still used today. Someone begging for help gets her to stop, and then other people pop out of the woods and take control. The sad truth is, without knowing more details, it's somewhat difficult to determine exactly how someone got Tracy out of her car that night. Given that her purse and ID were found at the scene, I've often considered the possibility that someone could have impersonated a police officer, pulled the young mother over and convinced her to step out of the car, at which time they just grabbed her, or produced a weapon and forced her into their own vehicle. That, however, assumes Tracy was driving on Highway 170 that night, and all available information suggests that is not the path she would have taken. Heading from Wetumpka to Eclectic, there's a couple of different routes. Highway 170 is centered between Highways 9 and 14, both of which can get you to her parents' home. Of course, on this night, there was ongoing construction work which would have caused part of 170 to be shut down, and Tracy knew all about it. So there's a good chance she would have been driving on 9 or 14 if she made it that far before she was taken. Highway 9 is the most likely path to take. It's fairly direct and offers the shortest travel time, that being approximately 33 minutes. Highway 14 during normal days would only take an additional 5, but you'd have to merge onto 170. So if avoiding construction was the issue, 14 doesn't make a lot of sense. Without merging on the 170, you'd have to drive pretty far out of the way and then do some backtracking. If you didn't mind the trip taking longer than necessary, it could be done via side streets, and depending on the road selected, it could take anywhere between 40 and 50 minutes. Tracy was obviously familiar with the area and would have known the best way to go, and to me that really only leaves the option of Highway 9. So the question would become, did Tracy make it to Highway 9, or was she intercepted somewhere along the way? We really have no way of determining the answer to that question, but I think it's a fairly safe bet to assume that leaving her car on Highway 170 is something that would have been done by someone who either knew that since the construction was happening, there would likely be less traffic, giving them more privacy to commit the crime, or someone was leaving the car there to make it look like Tracy drove it to that spot. Now, assuming this was a stranger situation doesn't necessarily mean it had to be someone who was from outside the area. I'm sure there were plenty of people living in Elmore or a nearby county who knew those roads extremely well but had never contacted Tracy. I suppose it would be a question of where they saw her and when they decided that she was the target. You've got about 10 miles running through the Blue Ridge area in Wetumpka, and it carries you through both busy areas and fairly rural ones. Once you've passed downtown Wetumpka, things turn very rural very fast. One thing I've always found interesting is that if you look at where Tracy's car was found, there are at least two nearby roads that connect 170 to Highway 9, with the most likely paths being either Pierce Chapel Road or Williams Road. There's also a few dirt roads between the highways, but judging from the look of Tracy's car, it didn't appear to have been driven down a dirt road for several miles. Here's the kicker, though. Judging by where Tracy's car was found, you're either looking for someone who lives close enough to walk home from there, or someone who knew the location of a phone to use to get picked up. Or more likely, you're looking at more than one person. One to drive their own vehicle while the other drives Tracy's. It's entirely possible this could have been a stranger crime committed by more than one person. Tracy was an attractive woman who may have caught the attention of people with bad intentions. She was a woman with a child, alone, an easy target. Assuming that they're familiar with the area, then they'd have known about the flooded quarries, asphalt pits, vast stretches of farmland and woods, all of which would be easy places to conceal a body that's never going to be found, or at least not found for a very long time. There have been some other disappearances in the area which remain unsolved, and could point towards one or more persons having done this kind of thing before or since. And Namus lists 4 unidentified bodies found in Elmore and surrounding counties as far back as 1986 and as recently as 2011. Statewide, there are currently 51 unidentified bodies listed for Alabama, and at least 2 have been recovered within 20 miles of where Tracy's car was found. So, could this be a crime done by someone Tracy didn't know in any way? Surely. There's no doubt this could be unconnected. But there are some details which make investigators believe there was likely some connection there. One of those details revolves around her daughter, found safe in the back seat of the car with the windows partially down and the radio playing. While this could be some bizarre behavior on the part of an abductor or abductors who don't have quite enough morals and conscience to not abduct a woman, but do have just enough to leave her 2-year-old daughter unharmed, the more likely solution is that this person knew Tracy, knew her daughter, and probably knew members of her family in some way. And while they wanted to target her, they didn't want to harm the child. So let's take a look at the possibility that Tracy knew her abductors. First things first, I want to address what most people suggest in cases like this, Tracy's ex-husband. I know that people like to comment on cases like this by saying, clearly the ex-husband did it, as if that's always the answer. But in this case, there doesn't appear to be anything pointing in that direction. Investigators have never mentioned him, Tracy's family have never thrown any kind of suspicion his way, and over the course of the past 23 years, he's worked hard to raise their daughter, who's kept in touch with her grandparents and never been shuttered away from them. He's had no run-ins with the law, nor has any of his property ever been subject of a search. Police questioned him, most assuredly, but to this day, his name has never been mentioned. Honestly, only one article I read researching this case mentioned him after the divorce. The divorce itself was finalized 16 days before Tracy vanished, and it wasn't a bitter one. No major disputes, no fighting, no long, drawn-out legal battle. None of that necessarily means he couldn't have been involved somehow, but I do think it's important to note there's absolutely nothing which suggests that he was. And after all these years, I imagine someone would have brought it up if they thought he was. We know there was an incident that occurred the night Tracy vanished. Several witnesses reported seeing her getting into an argument with people at the gas station where she was last seen. At least one reporter referred to these people as either being friends of Tracy's or perhaps one of the group was someone she was friends with. We don't know what they argued about, which would be nice to know, but I imagine the context could be closely related to a potential motive for the crime. It could also be that the argument, while serving to grab the attention of witnesses, was so completely unrelated and therefore not worth getting into. But I'd imagine someone would have said that by now if that was the case. According to the witnesses, Tracy left in her car and the people she was arguing with left in their own vehicle. There were no reports of peel-outs, any kind of a pursuit, or anything to suggest that the argument continued on elsewhere. That doesn't mean, though, that Tracy couldn't have encountered these people again that night or that they couldn't have been following her. I've always thought that the gas station was an odd location for her to have been seen that night. According to her parents, she was running errands and filling the gas tank, but that particular station was down on the southern edges of Wetumpka, and there were several stores and filling stations between her parents' home and that spot. I can't help but wonder if there was another stop in the area that Tracy was planning to make. Maybe police know but haven't shared it, or maybe that's another frustrating mystery in this case. But here's what I've been asking myself, and I've never been able to find a sufficient answer. Assuming the person or persons who abducted Tracy knew her in some way, but had no desire to harm her daughter, why did they go after her that night? If they knew she had her daughter with her, I don't understand why they couldn't have just made plans to strike at a later time when she wouldn't. If they didn't know, then that must have interfered with their plans to some degree. If you're going to go the distance of abducting Tracy, I imagine you might want to make her car disappear too. With the quarry nearby, it surely wouldn't have been that hard to dump it in there and leave police with even less to work with. If her disappearance is somehow connected to the gas station argument, then those people surely knew her daughter was with her. So, what could have happened that made making Tracy disappear so urgent it had to be done that night? It's one of the details of this case that just really frustrates me. Investigators didn't mention any potential suspects until they conducted the 2018 search, but I do think it's interesting that when they did mention them, they did so in a way which implied that these people have been suspects since the early days. It can be difficult to read between the lines sometimes. The way the DA talks, statements made by other investigators, makes it feel like not only do they have suspects, but these suspects know they're suspects. I mean, it would only make sense that they would have tried to have interviewed these people at some point, but maybe they aren't quite sure they're the ones who are the focus of the investigation. Captain Joe Herman of the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency made a few statements during and after the search where he vaguely referred to someone who may have helped after the fact. That implication being that one or more persons were involved in the abduction, and then another was involved in assisting the cover-up of the crime and disposing of Tracy's body. Despite how little's been revealed about this case, it seems likely that investigators have almost the complete picture. They know who was responsible, or at least seem to, but can't get their hands on the one piece of solid evidence that would give them the ability to make the arrest. According to DA Houston, after taking part in a 2015 interview arranged by Crime Stoppers, they received a tip which pointed them towards the property which was the subject of the 2018 search. This sprawling land of 300 acres sits in southeastern Elmore County, strangely near a community known as Friendship. Plat maps of the area only show one or two potential locations in which there's a parcel of land even drawing near to 300 acres, let alone surpassing that number. Investigators were quick to note that they don't believe the owner of the land was involved in any way, which to some might not make any sense. But it looks like there's quite a few chunks of land in the area which are owned by people who don't live nearby and rarely visit. For instance, one of the Jane Does found in the area was located in 2007 by a man who had owned the property since 1991, but had almost never been to it. What's interesting about this particular section of land is its proximity to where Tracy's car was found, just under 20 miles away, and the fact that investigators tried to go about the search quietly, noting that they didn't want to, quote, alert them. This suggests that not only are the suspects still in the area, but they would have noticed any police looking around. The only way I could imagine that happening is if they live nearby or have friends who live nearby. While I've managed to pinpoint the land that was searched for after spending far too much time examining Elmore County plat maps, there's little insight to be gained from it. We know the suspects didn't own it, and frankly, trying to narrow down any particular person living within a certain radius doesn't help, when no one has ever been publicly named. However, it is interesting to note that Redland Road is adjacent to the property, and that road meets US 231 at the gas station where Tracy was last seen. D.A. Houston firmly believed at the time of the search that the suspects were living in Elmore County when they committed the crime, and that they continued living there, at least until the time of the search. In what I can only describe as creepy and disturbing, there's a chance that someone with knowledge of Tracy's abduction, or even someone who is directly involved, may have volunteered for one of those early searches taking place along 170. Tragically, the answers here may lie somewhere difficult to reach, somewhere in the murky waters of a flooded quarry, or perhaps beneath a 5-acre pond that searchers described as being full of deer bones, making the search for human remains a true needle-in-a-haystack situation. Given what information we know, I tend to agree that there's likely a connection between Tracy and at least one of the people who was involved in her disappearance. Whether it was the result of the argument at the gas station or something in Tracy's life we've not been made aware of is difficult to say. Given the fact that her daughter was left behind unharmed and the windows were partially down with the radio playing, either points towards someone specifically not wanting to harm her, or maybe someone familiar with her and perhaps her family, which would give them pause. There's a lot of dirt roads that lead straight into the middle of the woods, areas where the car could have been left to ensure no one found it, at least not right away. I believe the car was left where it was specifically to increase the chances of someone finding it, and thus finding Tracy's daughter. But I also think there could be another possibility here. Yeah, someone could have had a twinge of conscience and didn't want to harm the child, or maybe they had some connection and didn't wish to see anything bad happen to her. But I also think there's a chance that leaving her in the car where she was could have been done for a more selfish reason. Police investigating the disappearance of a 30-year-old woman are going to kick things into pretty high gear early on. There's going to be searches, flyers, announcements to the media, and all of that happened here. Unfortunately, people can be jaded, disinterested. They may not want to get involved, or in some cases, they might not even care. However, if you've got a 30-year-old woman who disappears with a 2-year-old child, that's going to grab more attention. That's going to make the situation dire from the first moment, and while you'll never get everyone to react, those who might be dismissive of a missing adult may find it harder to ignore an innocent child being taken. That's purely speculation on my part, but something I've always thought about since I first started working on this case. This is really a sad story. A young mother with her whole life ahead of her vanishes nearly without a trace. For more than 20 years, her family's left to wonder what happened, and who may have been responsible, and do they know them? Investigators worked hard to drum up information and follow leads. Then, suddenly, after 17 years, someone gives them the tip they've been needing. They take their time, verify it, surveil the area, and eventually get what they need to launch the largest search effort that's ever been conducted in that area. In the end, they find themselves not back to square one, but still missing what they need to make an arrest and charge those responsible. Despite the frustration, the dead ends, and the constant sense that the answer is just beyond their grasp, they've never given up, and neither has Tracy's family, who have been left to endure the pain and misery of unknowing. We don't know what Tracy may have been doing today, what choices she would have made, or where she would have ended up, but we do know nothing mattered more to her than her daughter. She's an adult now, and she's doing really well. She looks just like Tracy. It's almost like a mirror image when you see their photos side by side. While Tracy was stolen from her and from her family, everything was taken from Tracy. She never got to watch her little girl grow up. She never got to see everything she's achieved and what she's going to achieve. Whoever took Tracy that night didn't just steal her life. They stole her dreams and the dreams of her family, who never got to see her hug her daughter at her graduation, get her ready for her first date, or meet the person she's going to spend the rest of her life with. How many things have you done, seen, accomplished in the past 23 years? For Tracy, all of that was taken in one night, and somehow the people responsible can just go about their lives like nothing happened. You know, there's one thing I've learned over the years of hosting Trace Evidence. For almost every crime, there's people out there who directly know the truth or who have a damn good idea of what happened. We know someone out there knows what happened to Tracy, who's responsible, and ultimately, where she can be found. One phone call led to a massive search. One more could lead to answers, to justice, and to Tracy. However, without someone coming forward, the discovery of new evidence or a major break in the case, the disappearance of Tracy Kegley will remain open, unsolved, and very cold. If you're looking for more information about the disappearance of Tracy Kegley, the Montgomery Advertiser has done extensive coverage, and WSFA News has put in a lot of time and effort as well. If you have any information about the disappearance of Tracy Kegley, please contact the Elmore County Sheriff's Office at 334-567-5546. You can also submit tips anonymously to Central Alabama Crime Stoppers by calling 334-215-STOP. That's 334-215-7867. You can also submit a tip online at 215stop.com. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, message me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. Trace Evidence would not be possible without support from amazing listeners like you. And now I'd like to take a moment to thank our fantastic Patreon producers, Alicia Lorraine, Brittany Bivens, Christine Greco, Krista Colvin, Denise Dingsdale, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, James, Jennifer Winkler, Joni Berkowitz, Kara Moreland, Kevin Bonham, Marla Wright, Melissa Breckeisen, Michael Draves, Nick Mohar-Schurz, Quinn McBreen, Roberta Jansen, Sarah Levinen, Sarah Mascaritolo, Travis Skepko, Stephanie Joyner, Stephanie Eve, Tom Archer, Tom Radford, Tracy Woods, and Vox Nihili. Your contributions to Trace Evidence are invaluable, and your support of the show is both appreciated and extremely humbling. If you're interested in supporting Trace Evidence and gaining access to exclusive merch and ad-free episodes, please visit patreon.com/traceevidence or go to trace-evidence.com and click on the support option. That's going to conclude this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, sharing the show, and helping keep these cases alive. I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.